Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Real World Ophthalmology Podcast, where we explore the latest advancements and insights for young ophthalmologists to enhance your education year-round. I'm your host, Dr. Lisa Nijem, and I'm honored to be joined by Dr. Jeff Petty, Moran's Clinical Vice Chair and Associate Professor at the University of Utah Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Sciences, and Dr. Paul Chan, Professor and Chair at the Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Sciences at the Illinois Eye and Ear Infirmary at University of Illinois in Chicago. So welcome, Dr. Petty and Dr. Chan.
Thank you, Lisa. It's an honor.
Thank you.
I'm sure everyone does know you, but just in case there's someone listening who doesn't, could each of you please give just a brief intro about what you're doing now, your specialty, your other roles, and how you got involved in global ophthalmology? And Jeff, we'll start with you.
Yeah. So again, Jeff Petty, I'm at the Moran Eye Center in Salt Lake City. My engagement in global eye health certainly goes well back to training at the Moran Eye Center. I completed a global ophthalmology fellowship. At that time, I was kind of one of the early ones to do this. Global ophthalmology or global eye health fellowship, it's essentially your first postgraduate year after residency, rather than doing subspecialty training. You then kind of engage in this global eye health field. That has then taken me to, you know, a variety of roles. From the Academy of Ophthalmology to other institutions, entities. And if I had to capture what I want to do or hoping to accomplish in global eye health, it's really connecting, collaborating so that we can really harness the efforts of all of us. Global eye health, the burden of blindness, of eye disease is so great, it can really feel overwhelming. But when we come together and again, synergize with what we're doing, the problems become a little smaller and more digestible and things that we can address and improve.
Fantastic. Paul?
Great. Hey, Lisa. Jeff, thank you. So I have a little bit of a different route. So currently What do I do?
A lot of things.
I'm Paul Chan. I am trained as a pediatric retina surgeon, right? So that's what I did before I came to Chicago. I still do that. But you know, currently, you know, I think probably one of my main job is I'm the department chair for ophthalmology at the Illinois Eye and Ear at UIC here in Chicago. I love Jeff's answer. And his, you know, his sort of journey through the global ophthalmology space as a global ophthalmology fellow. When I was doing my training, I actually didn't have that option. So I think like a lot of folks in my generation, the way that we got involved was by kind of just doing it and figuring it out. So when I was at Cornell on faculty, you know, we can go more into this. That was really the first part of my journey. Around me specifically going into global ophthalmology and getting involved in that space. And a lot of it focused on education and the pediatric retina condition that I deal with. But I think this is a really fun journey. We'll have this discussion today around what global ophthalmology has evolved into. And I think very importantly, you know, what I found to be fun is working with national societies, working with organizations, connecting people, trying to build on this, and trying to make impact more on a global scale, so to speak, right, in our profession. And I work as the Secretary for Global Alliances for the American Academy of Ophthalmology, and what we can talk more about what that means.
Yeah, thank you so much to both of you. We're honored to have such experts here today discussing this important topic. And what you said, Paul, just kind of segues perfectly into the first topic that I wanted to discuss. And that's how global ophthalmology has really evolved over the last several years. When I was in training, also, there was an option to go into global ophthalmology when you finish. It was some that few have kind of carved their own paths. But I think over the last several years, it's gone through some significant changes. And instead of delivering care, and now the buzzword in medical volunteerism is building capacity. And there has been this growing focus on partnering with individuals and groups to improve education and training, procure equipment, connect community with local resources, and then, as you said, connecting societies and bringing physicians across the globe to help each other help patients in their locales. So I think for our young ophthalmology audience, there are probably two different tracks to explore, and I would love to hear your thoughts on both of them. One are things to do perhaps during training when you are still residency fellowship, and then what things that you can do in practice, and sort of how you see young ophthalmologists and global ophthalmology in both kind of areas. So, Jeff, do you want to start us off?
Yeah. You know, Lisa, such a great question. You framed it so beautifully. So right now it's interview season. Med students are applying to residency, and they're really, really interested. You know, what resources do you have? How can I engage in global eye health? You know, do residents do rotations, et cetera? And the bottom line is, for all of them, they don't know where they're going yet. And they're going to either end up in a place that is more well-resourced in global eye health or less well-resourced. And does that mean that, you know, those who are going to programs that don't have, you know, global eye health programs, are they not going to be able to engage? And the answer is simply no. So 100% of ophthalmologists and ophthalmology residents, fellows, you engage by engaging locally. There is no location, no residency locale where there isn't a free clinic or a burden of low vision, unfunded patients that you can't engage with right now. So in residency, there was a free clinic really primarily focused on homeless patients in Salt Lake City. And, you know, I love that clinic. I'd go every year. And, you know, after three running years, just became really frustrated because we'd see some of these same patients coming back in the next year, still blind from cataracts. And just, it's like, we'll see you next year was the best that we could tell them. And that was just wholly, wholly unacceptable. And that led to collaborations with other residents and creating a kind of local surgical program. Before I'd, you know, ever left the country and the world of ophthalmology, you know, it was 3 to 4 really rich years of engaging in kind of global eye health in our backyard. And when I say global, I don't mean low resource countries or third world. I just mean global, including our backyard. So wherever a resident is, they should and can engage. Now, they may have an opportunity, a faculty member that goes somewhere or a program that makes it really easy. And if you want to engage, simply take that path every time you can. You'll come to a lot of forks in the road. A lot of times it's really inconvenient to engage, to take your time, to leave family, friends. But if you really want to do it, every time one of those opportunities comes up, always take that. And no matter where you're training, you'll have an opportunity.
Paul, what do you think from the resident aspect? I know this is a big focus at UIC as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Jeff, as always, you know, articulated this really well, which is globally starts locally, right? And you hear this said so many times by all of us in this space. And there's this sort of intentionality in how we frame this, right? Which is global ophthalmology. And I remember these conversations over a decade ago around the academy, right? And what the academy should have as the focus. And Jane Aguirre, who was the vice president for the global secretariat at the time, membership, you know, really talked about this. You know, should we call it international ophthalmology? Should we call it something else? And I think, you know, we really all committed to this idea of global, right? And the reason, I think, is because of what Jeff just said, which is this local aspect to what we do, caring for the underserved and the communities within the United States, and also high resource countries. I mean, even I know at Jeff's program, they do a lot with the sort of the Indian communities and the sort of local communities there. And that's local within the United States, and many other programs do this as well. So from a resident aspect about getting involved, it's a much different time now, right, from when Jeff and I trained. And I think what's interesting that, you know, think about what happened during the pandemic is that we've all become more connected, right, just in general. And the generations of learners now have this ability to connect with each other, not just in the US, but also internationally, to learn from their peers and others, so that it truly is a more connected community, right, of learners. And I think that one of the things that came up, you know, Grace Sun, who was a resident with me and also junior faculty, I remember going on our first international trip, and we went to Mwanza in Tanzania. And I remember, you know, she said, well, you know, I'm a resident, you know, what can I do? And what you recognize is that even the way that we learn here and the resources that we have can be shared in many different ways with people outside the US. And also how much we both learned and all of us learn from our international partners, right? So there's this bi-directionality to this. So from a resident learning perspective, one is that it's easier to communicate. Two, our national societies have a lot more resources and have paid a lot more attention to providing them with the resources to get involved. And I think three, you have things like the Global Ophthalmology Summit, where there is a community. You have the Academy's Go community, right, as a member in training. You have a lot of great mentors, you know, like Jeff and many others, you know, in this space. So there is a larger community of people involved that can help direct residents, medical students, fellows, young ophthalmologists into getting more involved, right, and then being mentors of their own. You know, and I remember, like I said, when I started doing this, I was told by my mentor specifically, Paul, do not pursue an academic career in global ophthalmology because you will not get promoted. And there's a longer story around this one that will take more than, you know, this podcast. But, you know, some of the folks that told me that absolutely believe in the global ophthalmology mission at this time, which is terrific.
And that's so wonderful to see how this conversation has evolved and how we have so many more opportunities now for people who do want to get involved. One of them that I wanted to touch on here, because I think both of you did a great job of talking about doing in residency. We also now have global ophthalmology fellowships. And that was something that I didn't have, wasn't an option for me when I finished. So if you could give just kind of a brief overview of what those involved, and if somebody, if there is a resident who's really passionate about global ophthalmology and is considering a fellowship, what would you have them do to prepare to be a good candidate for one of those fellowships?
I'll take that. You know, I love these questions around how can people engage. So again, every single resident across the country can engage locally no matter what. Take advantage of the easy opportunities, the low-lying fruit, if they are available internationally. And Paul, you hit the nail on the head. Everyone can attend the Global Ophthalmology Summit. That is the place where you come together to find your community. And so much for me, it's like going to Comic-Con for the first time and finding all the other adults that dress up in spandex and walk around like it's normal, right? You find your people, and there's real magic that happens when you're surrounded by other people, like-minded, interested. It's really designed nearly wholly around engaging young ophthalmologists. What do you need to know so you don't go in and make errors, mistakes? And then finally, for those that really know, I mean, the one way, if you 100% know in your career you want to engage in global eye health, do a global ophthalmology fellowship. And the reason is this: you will have a full year of experiences that teach you what global eye health is. This is a health system issue. This is not an issue of simply we need a couple more surgeons in the area. The entire health system. Healthcare delivery system. It's a finance issue. Those places in the world that deliver highest quality care, Aravind, LV Prasad, Tolganga, in lower resource settings, those are things that you couldn't ever just replicate with your medical knowledge coming from a US or Canadian residency program. Those are things you can only see that are developed organically. And so within that, you also will work with Paul Chans and Grace Sons and Jacqueline O'Banions and other leaders. And we all know when we look back on our careers, they were shaped by those influential mentors that hit us at the right time to help us get to where we are. And we all have those stories. The access is there through the summit. And now the access is really there through deep mentorship through those global ophthalmology fellowships, which are available to, in fact, I'm not aware of anyone who wanted to go into one who hasn't been able to match or go unmatched into one. What did I miss, Paul?
No, I think that's right. So it's, it creates a structure, right, around what you want to potentially do with your life. And I think what's really interesting is that the Global Ophthalmology Fellowships, and again, this is me moving to Chicago 8 years ago, wanting to get into this space, you know, trying to be cool, a cool kid like, you know, Jeff Petty and, you know, these folks who started the fellowships and did their fellowships. And one of the things you recognize is that it's a community, right? So every fellowship, and there's about 8 or 9 of them now, is uniquely different in certain ways because of the mentors that are there, but all with the same goal and purpose and mission, right? And that's what I love about it. And fundamentally what it comes down to, and again, Jeff mentioned this, is mentorship, right? And you're not just getting mentored by the people in that fellowship or the program that you're in, you're getting mentorship from this community of people that are also preceptors from these other programs, right? And then the Go Summit and all these things. I feel like we should pump up the Go Summit a little bit more. But it really is truly exceptional. It's this phenomenal group of people. So I think what I will say, okay, and this is something that I do recognize, is that people who want to go into this space, one of the things people ask me, oh, okay, I want to do a global ophthalmology and get involved internationally. You have to get really good at being an ophthalmologist, right? Like that's the key. You have to focus in on your residency, be a great resident, focus in on, you may want to do a subspecialty, right? So I wanted to do retina and I just fell into this ROP space, you know, by happenstance. And that's what I became really good at. So I'd say that whether you're anterior segment, posterior segment, oculoplastics, whatever you end up doing, find a clinical niche and be great at it, right? And then the global ophthalmology piece, then what's interesting about that is that that can also take many different flavors. You know, it can be, I want to go into an academic program. I want to commit to research around this. And, you know, keep in mind, people have been doing this way before us, like Sheila West, Alan Robin, this whole group of people, David Friedman, you know, have been, you know, building programs, who have been consulting, who have been doing research in this space. This is just an evolution of what people before us have done, right? And I would say that it's a great movement. It's a great learning experience. The fellowships are terrific. But I do say that they are continuing to evolve. And I'm gonna make a plug for Jacqueline and the work that she's doing with the folks at Wisconsin and you and some others around curriculum. And from my perspective around the American Academy of Ophthalmology, we as an academy are supporting this movement because we believe that this is really the future.
I think those are such important points. And what you said actually can translate regardless of your specialty and your interest in global ophthalmology, but your interest in just helping patients, taking the time during training to become that excellent ophthalmologist is going to help you, you know, in many facets, all facets of your career. And even if you choose later that you want to be involved in global ophthalmology, that's the foundation, is having those great skills that you can then apply and help when you travel abroad.
Yeah, I do want to comment on one thing. And one of the things that I found really neat too is that the fellowship programs, and again, this is related to the Go Summit, have really come together during the Go Summit. So they have this Thursday program prior to the Go Summit. You know, Peter McIntosh, who's our fellowship coordinator, you know, with Jacqueline and with Jeff, you know, they've all done a great job in creating this really great experience for the fellows that goes beyond just the technical skills, right? And building that community so that even after your fellowships, they're all connected. And I think that that's a really neat thing that's been happening over the past several years.
That's great. So we focus now on what, you know, residency, what you can do in fellowship. What about practicing ophthalmologists? I mean, a lot of these things can apply there as well. But somebody who is early or even middle career ophthalmologists who maybe now wants to do more. Jeff, I know you're going to say it, and this is excellent because there's so many people in our own communities, in our own backyard, as you said, as both of you said, who need our help and who could benefit from things being established, especially for underserved and under-resourced areas. But do you have any suggestions for young ophthalmologists who are in practice, who have taken and may have an interest in global ophthalmology?
Paul, you can take it with all your wisdom.
A lot of wisdom being shared here.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting because I think when we think about people who have gone into global ophthalmology historically, sort of let's say in the private practice community, right? So this is one of the things that comes up a lot, where fellows will graduate or residents will graduate who are going to comprehensive, and they'll want to continue this involvement in international work, right? Or global ophthalmology. Now, what I will say, again, going back to the points that Jeff and I made earlier, is that there's a lot of work to be done in our US-based communities, right? And volunteering and caring for populations, you know, outside of, like the programs that the American Academy has around just volunteering to provide care to patients who otherwise wouldn't have care, right? There's a lot of resources in that space. It does become more challenging, I think, for younger ophthalmologists within the first 5 years to say, I'm going to commit to doing X number of time outside of the US, be away from my practice, be away from my family, right? And this is something I experienced as well. I've two young children. I'm an older dad. You know, I don't love being away from my kids or my wife, you know, for prolonged periods of time, especially when they're growing. So there are those considerations, and there are clear economic considerations that people have. There are folks who do make it a focus of their academic life, right, in terms of applying for grants. And the National Eye Institute also has a lot of activity and resources and programming in this space to provide grants around international collaborations and so forth. So there are mechanisms in that space. What I've seen happen a lot, right, it just in sort of my career, is that you see someone who has had a great career, has built their practice, and then they say, okay, I'm good, right? And I want to find ways to contribute. And they, you know, I had Marilyn Miller as one of my mentors, and she talks to me about the first time she went abroad, and she must have been in her 40s or late 40s when she first started. But then she went back to Nigeria over 40 times over the course of her career, and was probably one of the pioneers in the global ophthalmology space. I work with folks like people like Dan Alter, right, who now, through working with Marilyn and Focus, which is a nonprofit, is now starting residency programs, you know, outside the US, right? And it's a passion that he's developed, but later in his career, right? So, you know, from an academic side, I think there's a lot of opportunity, and I've seen that work really well. I'd love to understand also, you know, from Jeff's perspective, what advice you give folks, you know, who are going into private practice, how to stay engaged. Because I find that to be the harder one to figure out.
Yeah, and it's difficult because the private practice environment is just so variably different. And it is, to your point, it's at a time in your career where often, you know, you're trying to look like you're a team player and not make them regret hiring you. So asking for, 6 weeks off to go overseas isn't really top of the list, and a lot of concerns about how you're being perceived. Good news is there really are pathways. So as with anything, you need to become a student of the subject. You can digest everything on the Academy's website and then find additional resources through podcasts, other means, just to better understand what it is, what would it actually mean? Having a clear idea of what it is you want is also helpful. Articulate your goals, write that down so it's clear. And then you need to find those mentors, and that comes through community. And the pathway now is you attend the Global Ophthalmology Summit. And I can guarantee over 2 years, you will meet, connect, find those mentors. If you need connections to help you start engaging abroad, you can't, however, control what resources are available to you at the time that you're wanting to do this. You might be if you're a resident, you might be at a residency program where it's easy and you have to say no because there's too many things to do. You might be at a residency program if you're a resident where there's no opportunities. You got to find your own. It's the same thing in private practice. You may not know a single person who's ever done any global work. You can't help that. All you can do is seek mentors. But when you do have those, again, that kind of low-lying fruit, accessible, a partner, maybe it's an ENT colleague or something that's done something, you just need to take that step. We tend to vote with our feet. And in short, we all want to do things, but then we do the things we really want. And if you really want to do it, you'll find those pathways. You can do it again through the summit, finding mentors there, or through whatever local resources you have. But until you take that step forward and step out, you won't know if this is something that you really want to engage in, how you want to engage. And then just briefly, just to echo you, Paul, impact comes through consistency. You will make so little impact the first time you go out. You will, if anything, you know, take more resources and teaching that toward you than you're going to impart. Impact comes through consistency, longitudinal engagement, kind of measured sometimes on decades. But that's where the real magic happens. It's just that consistency of showing up, building trust, engaging. And it doesn't matter if it's in a small practice, a big practice, what country. The consistency is where the beautiful music is made.
I love it. These are life lessons that expand beyond global ophthalmology. I've got two questions left in the time that we have. And actually, the first one I don't know the answer to. Is there somewhere, if an ophthalmologist in practice is looking to get involved in global work, and maybe they don't have a mentor, someone that they know directly, is there somewhere that has listed like Focus, like Orbis, like the different places that are doing global mission work?
Yeah. So Jeff, you mind if I just take this one a little bit? So it's interesting. There was a long time ago. Again, I'm like this historical reference.
In a galaxy far away. Go ahead.
Jessica Fallmeyer, who is in Omaha, Nebraska, and Mike Fallmeyer, who was one of, a contemporary of Jeff's in terms of, was one of Jeff Tabin's fellows. She started a website that actually did that. I'm not sure what happened to it. It was actually posted on the Go Guide at one time, but there's more and more discussion around this. Now, what I will say is that the Academy launched, so if you're an Academy member, the Academy did launch something called the Global Ophthalmology Community. And it's something that people can tap into and that they can ask these types of questions around, you know, hey, I'm interested in working, you know, and with communities, you know, in somewhere, right? And, you know, working in Mongolia, I do a lot of work in Mongolia, and it would trigger, it's like a listserv, right? And people would basically just say, I'm working there. What questions do you have? There are other resources on the Academy, like the Global Directory of Training Opportunities, that do point people to resources and areas where they can train or they can do research or observerships and so forth. And that is more bi-directional, right? It's for U.S. people who want to go abroad, but also people from abroad who want to come to the U.S. and so forth. But I think your question is more, is there just some list, right, of opportunity.
Well, I mean, I think you answered it. Yeah, somewhere that has resources that people can turn to. We're definitely going to link up and direct people to Global Ophthalmology Summit. But if they want to find out what organizations are involved in this kind of work and, you know, maybe spend some time learning more, if there was somewhere that they could go to that would help with that.
And then, Jeff? You could always go to the Go Summit, but I'll pass it off to you.
Yeah. And that global training, Global Directory of Training Opportunities on the Academy side, it is helpful. Again, it is bi-directional. So you'll see a lot of U.S. institutions that are hosting internationals, but anyone can post there. So you can go and post. They're not endorsed by anyone, but it is an opportunity for you to see what's available in other communities. Most of the time, how it ends up working in reality is rather than that kind of cold calling from lists, everyone, you know, has done a residency somewhere, has trained somewhere, and it's oftentimes calls back to the programs to see who is engaged, who do you know. And at this point, because this community has grown, I'd be hard pressed to imagine that there isn't an affiliation of some global engagement now with every department in some manner.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right. So last question, and then if you have any final remarks, but rural ophthalmology is known for sharing the lessons that we wish we knew sooner. So I would ask both of you if there were, just some lessons that you've wished that you knew about global ophthalmology, either about getting involved in it as a field or about your first mission trip, but something, things that you wish you knew sooner and would give some advice and insight to our young ophthalmology listeners.
You're up, Paul.
From a global, there's so many life lessons, right? There's so many things that I wish I knew or I did better. I would say that from the global ophthalmology part of my life, if I had to go back in time and if I could say, what would I have done differently? One, I would say, what would I have wanted differently? I would have wanted to do a global ophthalmology fellowship, but those did not exist. I think that for me, it would have been, I probably would have tapped into just reaching out to folks at the American Academy of Ophthalmology sooner during my early years as a faculty member, but I didn't. And a lot of it because I didn't know. So that I know that the Academy has a lot of resources, and they had a lot of resources back then as well, in terms of people that could have connected me in this space. But it just wasn't something that was on my radar, okay, at the time. So the most important thing is, if you don't have specific mentors in the area that you are specifically interested in, so for me, it was at the time of the global part or how do I get more involved, I would say, don't be afraid of reaching out to mentors, even if they have no idea who you are. And I would say that I was very shy in that space. I wasn't one of those people who would say, I want to contact so-and-so because I think that they know, how to guide me. I was too, say, I kind of took the place of, why would they want to talk to me, right? And I think that that's what I would have done very differently. I would have just reached out to people and said, hey, I'm interested in doing this and building capacity in this area. I was wondering if I could have a conversation with you. And you'd be surprised. I think most of us in this space are happy to have conversations with anyone who have an interest. But that's what I would have done differently.
Really well said, Paul. So many lessons, and I think that might be things I wish I knew sooner. Global ophthalmology for me has been the great teacher. I remember being an undergrad, and you'd always see the 45-year-old guy in the statistics class or something, and everyone's like, oh, I wonder what his story is. That's all of our stories in the space. There's no such thing as arriving. There's no such thing as clinical or rather cultural competence. You can approach it with a cultural humility. You're a cultural learner. You never become competent in it. I can think of as many mistakes, errors, lessons learned as I can successes over time in the space. I particularly remember a really poignant moment. This is when I was very junior. I was in another country where there were some, huge, huge names in ophthalmology. And I was pretty much like, carry the bags, fix the microscopes, adjust the chair height. Every so often things would calm down enough where I could, do some small incision or something. But in effect, I was there to try and facilitate everything just work. And I remember flying home from that trip and the feeling that I had really done something. I actually had really accomplished something. I had facilitated other people being able to do something really great. And then I kind of thought, when I arrive, when I get to be the time that I'm that surgeon, that's when it's really going to feel different. And, turns out going back to the same place 3 years later, now I'm the senior surgeon. I'm the one, doing the primary teaching, doing the primary surgery. And I'm on this flight on the way home, and I just felt I just felt a little empty. I felt like put all these resources in and the impact I had was relatively small. And I'm really grateful for that moment because it taught me a couple things. One of the things it taught me is when you primarily perform the surgery, your impact is actually quite small. Your longitudinal impact, and that's not taking away from the lives impacted and their ability to return to families and resume, you know, productive lives at a different level. But for all the resources we have, if that ends up being our only output or the individual patients we operate on, then that's a relatively narrow scope. And that's where it really taught me, one, the more you can do to teach and empower, the more impactful you'll be. And it requires decades upon decades upon decades. The amount of engagement, learning back and forth as you learn and as they learn together, and that partnership grows and you build trust, that is something where your success can really only be measured in decades. And we literally need all hands on deck. It doesn't matter if, like, you're a brilliant podcaster and that's going to be your contribution because you're now engaging thousands of people that wouldn't be engaged otherwise. Doesn't matter if you're a programmer and you're programming some new and innovative ways that people can learn across the country or across the world. There are some, most residencies in the world, they don't actually require surgical training. That might be crazy to hear. So there's a whole lot of surgical teaching that needs to be done. I've got more questions than answers. I've got way more to learn than I have to impart. And that's the great lesson that I wish I knew sooner.
Wow. Thank you both so much. This has been such an insightful podcast and discussion where I think you've both given incredible, like I said, life and career advice, and then great insight into the world of global ophthalmology and what young ophthalmologists can do to take a part of it.
I do want to mention one thing.
Yes.
And this, I'm not trying to get the last word here, but I do want to mention one thing that's so important is peer mentorship. You know, we talk about mentors as if everyone's older than us and so forth. But I would say I would be nowhere in my life without my friends who are of my generation, people like Hunter Cherwick, who have guided me in this journey, provided advice, people like Jeff, you know, who I've learned so much from, and others, you know, who are my peers, you know, like you, Lisa, who have pushed us along the way. And I think that that is critically important, especially in this space.
Yeah, brilliantly said.
We're going to have a second podcast just on Hunter Cherwick and everything he's done in global ophthalmology. So don't worry, Paul. I'm kidding. Jeff, are there any last words?
No, thank you. It's an honor. Again, the opportunity is there for all of us to engage. It's going to look different for everyone. Just lean in, and that way you will look back at a career of longitudinal impact as opposed to a career you wish you'd started a little sooner.
Wow, I love that. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for sharing your time and passion on this topic. Your dedication to improving eye health globally is truly inspiring. And I think you will see much more coming from the young ophthalmology community based on your mentorship and guidance. And I thank you to all our listeners. I would encourage you, if you're not already, to become a part of Real World Ophthalmology. It's free. It's by physicians for physicians. We have a plethora of educational content at our signature meetings and in-person events and through things like this podcast. So give us a follow on social media, and we'll see you soon. Thanks again.
Thanks, Lisa.